From the Tapped Out Wrestling Network studio, we bring you the original Tapped Out Wrestling Podcast with your hosts, Nick McDaniel and Myron Fancher. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Tapped Out Wrestling Podcast. I am your host today, Nick McDaniel. I'm flying solo at the chair, but of course, man, hey, when I do these solo shows, it's typically an interview show. And today, guys, I bring you a very special guest. I consider him probably the hottest name in wrestling podcast world today, the Alabama Dream himself, Conrad Thompson. Conrad, how's it going, buddy?
Well, you're too kind. I'm going to have to disagree. I don't think I'm the hottest name in podcast, but it's a nice thing to hear. I appreciate the compliment.
Well, as you know, I've kind of messaged you before, and I always tell you, it's we feel like you're at the top of the mountain, and we're all chasing just to be number two. There might be one or two guys who, you might call a bigger name, but I think everything it seems like you touch turns to gold when it comes to the podcast world.
Man, that's nice of you to say, but I got to tell you, there's no sort of magic sauce. It's just hard work, dude. I'm really trying to focus on it and give people what they want to hear, or at least doing my best to. And at the end of the day, I'm not a wrestling insider. I'm not in the business. I've never made a living in the wrestling industry. I've never taken a bump. I'm just trying to give the wrestling fans what they want to hear, and that's kind of easy for me because I'm a wrestling fan, and I know what I would want to hear.
But here we're going to have a Georgia boy, go Dogs, and a Bama boy. And, so I know you're Roll Tide over there. Hopefully we can get through this without killing each other because I still haven't recovered from that 2012 game. You remember that one?
I do remember that one. It was a fun game. I don't remember the last time Georgia beat Alabama. But
that's not unusual.
I don't know that I've been alive when that happened. But, I mean, it's fun to imagine, I guess.
Yeah, I'm still recovering from that SEC that we get, Conley catches the ball like a, it just frustrates us to no end that we were that close to winning an SEC title from Bama in 2012, and we just didn't pull it off. But, hey, we'll put football to the side because if there's
Hang on now. Do you remember that time y'all tried to do a blackout game for us? Like y'all were just going to walk all over us and we thumped that head for you? I remember that game.
The good thing is having you on, as I did joke about it with some friends of mine, they're all like, yeah, but he's a Bama guy. I go, could be worse. He could be an Auburn guy.
No, we both agree on that. If there's one thing we agree on, it's our hate of Auburn.
Absolutely. That's a real deep hate for us over here in Georgia, as you can probably imagine. Those losses sting worse than any Bama loss by any stretch of the imagination. But back to the topic at hand, I mean, you were talking about the podcast, you guys rock and roll over there. And it's, we were talking about, I looked this morning, you guys were ranked 32 in the sports and recreation. Now, Matt, wrap your mind around that. That's Colin Cowherd, Bill Simmons, the big dogs. And you guys are still crushing it every week with something to wrestle. I mean, that's obviously the big one. That I just kind of wanted to hit. But before we get started, I just wanted to let some people know, I don't know why you wouldn't know this if you're listening to Conrad on the show, but let's kind of give some people like a wrap up of kind of how you even got into the podcasting world.
Well, it was just kind of a happy accident. I have been advertising my mortgage company on the radio and television here in Huntsville and Tennessee since 2009. And in 2013, I had the opportunity to befriend the Nature Boy, Ric Flair, and we hit it off and became fast friends. And we've kind of, grown to be really, really good friends. And he had an opportunity in 2015 to do a podcast. And he reached out to me and asked if I would come in and just sit in with him and ask fan questions for his first episode while he got comfortable. He felt like it might be a little awkward to just sit in front of a microphone and talk. He wanted to kind of bounce things off of somebody. So because of that, he invited me to come into the studio, and CBS was happy. He was happy. He kept asking me to come back. Time goes on, and when you're tight with Rick, you meet everybody in the wrestling business, and that includes Tony Schiavone and Bruce Pritchard. So eventually, I have an opportunity to get to know those guys, and I realize they have stories that should be shared. And I wanted to kind of upset the apple cart with the typical podcast formula. And we tried to do that with Rick's second podcast too. And we made that sound a little more like a radio show with guests, but then a little bit of topical stuff and then some old throwback segments, and then just some funny bits along the way, but more of a radio show style feel. And then with Bruce, I said, hey, let's not talk about current wrestling at all, and let's get away from the interview format. Let's just tell your story. And that came about from us just sitting on my couch in my den one day when I said, "Hey, man, what happened when?" And he finished a story for me that was fascinating. So an hour later, I said, "Dude, this is a podcast. Like, that's what people really want to hear." And it worked out.
But yeah, that's an understatement. I think, you know, as far as working out, I mean, and you're right. As far as the podcast, that's top of my list every week. Have to, you know, subscribe. It's there when I wake up and I, you know, listen to it going in and out of work, every, you know, every week. And just absolutely love it. And one of the aspects of the show I really enjoy is kind of the, you remember, it's a Crossfire, that show, that style where you guys kind of go at it a lot. And it seems like that confrontation seems to be the biggest draw in the podcast world. And you guys do it, and it's supernatural, obviously, from your relationship.
Yeah, it was kind of a happy accident. You know, we decided just to kind of beat up what the newsletters have put out there for years, that we as wrestling fans have kind of always just been led to believe is kind of the gospel. And then ask someone who was there what really happened. And I'm not saying that what Bruce says every time is 100% accurate, but I'm also not silly enough to believe that everything that someone tells Dave is 100% accurate. In either case, you've got the testimony from someone, so there's going to be a little bit of a slant or an agenda or an end game in mind with either version of the story. The truth is somewhere in the middle. So we present in our show Dave Meltzer's report, which is something he heard, something he was told, and then you get the report of someone else who was there. And the truth is probably somewhere in the middle. And that's what I think is fun, is when we both fight for our truth. I believe what Meltzer said a lot of the time. He believes what he believes. And most of the time, it's semantics. But when Bruce gets fired up about those little details, that makes for podcast gold.
Yeah, it's a lesson I try to teach my kids. I have three daughters. And I always tell them exactly what you said. There's three sides to every story, right? There's your side, her side, and the truth somewhere in the middle. I have to determine what that middle is as the dad. And it's kind of probably the same thing, as, you know, you're giving Meltzer's opinion and he's given his. And I always tell everyone, this, the perception of the story is your side, that you're telling what you remember, and it's always skewed. But what you led me to my next question is, were you a big, you know, dirt sheet guy growing up with, because I mean, I know Meltzer's something you always address on the show.
I started subscribing to The Observer in 1997, so I'm 35 now. I've been subscribing since I was 15.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
And then that's one of the, you know, I always kind of wanted to dig this question because, you know, I did hear the story about the bump in at the Orlando show with Meltzer and Bruce. What is that, you know, dynamic, that relationship there?
What, with Bruce and I?
No, with Meltzer and Bruce.
Well, they don't have a relationship. You know, it started out as they were both friendly. I'm sure when he worked in the WWF at first, but I know that when he first heard of The Observer back when he was, you know, working with the Houston territory, it was one of those deals where you don't, you know, he was brought in by old school, so you don't talk to the dirt sheets. You don't, you know, what happens here stays here. You're not even supposed to be in the back or see the magic, or you're not supposed to share any of that. And I know that that's kind of the mentality he had, but there was a period there early in Bruce's tenure where McMahon wanted to try to play nice with the dirt sheets, and he was tasked, Bruce was, with kind of being the liaison. So I think they got along just fine and were very friendly for a long time. Maybe not necessarily friends, but polite, cordial, and both realized they had a job to do, maybe not going to go hang out and have a beer. Well, then in time, of course, you know, whenever I would challenge Bruce and use Dave's information as the reason, Bruce is really upset with me and the way I'm presenting the information, more so than what Dave wrote. But it's easier, at least then, in that moment, for him to say, "F Dave Meltzer." And I get it. But really and truly, he's not upset, usually, with what Dave wrote. He's upset with the way I'm presenting it.
Gotcha.
Gotcha.
The other question I have is, Wade doesn't come up a lot, Keller. Is it because in the history you said you subscribe to The Observer, is that just kind of because that was kind of your history of what you were reading and not the other side?
I subscribed to The Torch for a little while. I'm still a subscriber now, but I subscribe now to read my friend Bruce Mitchell's work. I think Wade is was once upon a time a very valuable resource in the wrestling business, and he was always, at least to me, positioned as kind of the number two guy. His presentation and his formatting of his newsletter may be far superior, but the content you got and the detail from Dave Meltzer, in my opinion, was unparalleled. But I subscribed to both in paper format long ago, and now I subscribe to both online. But in my mind, and this is not, you know, crapping on the torch, because I think a lot of Bruce Mitchell and consider him to be a very good friend, and I'm pretty friendly with Jim Valley as well, and both of those guys are over there. But I don't know Wade, but to me, the pecking order is clear. It's Dave Meltzer is the ultimate source on news, and if you're looking for old school archives and stuff like that, Dave Meltzer's word is above all others. And second is Mike Johnson. I think as far as the current present day stuff, the stuff that's happened over the last 15, 16, 17, 18 years, Mike Johnson is just as savvy as anybody else and is just as on top of it. So to me, it's Dave Meltzer, and then it's Mike Johnson, and then it's everybody else. And I'm sure there are lots of people listening to this who are big Torch fans, and I pay them money, so I can't say that I'm not a Torch fan, but Wade's not my guy.
I agree. I listen to Mike a lot on Taz's podcast. I like Sam, even when he's on JR's as well. But Meltzer, obviously, like you said, is considered pretty much the top guy. I just was curious as to why Meltzer was always the name and not, you know, we didn't get Keller a lot.
Well, here's a for instance. When was the last time you saw anybody online talk about what Wade Keller's rating of a match was?
True.
Everybody online talks about how many stars did Meltzer give it, you know, and so when they saw it was a 4-star match, it was a 5-star match. If you were to look up how many 5-star matches were there in the last 5 years, not one site will return Wade Keller's site rankings and or match rankings. And I'm not saying that to diminish his efforts or work. I'm just saying that was kind of Dave's deal first, and one of the things that was a hallmark and a cornerstone of his newsletter, and now people know him for that. And so even when we talk about, oh, it's a 4-star match, even though that maybe was made up by Jim Cornette or TV Guide, it's really a Dave Meltzer thing, and everybody else copies it and everybody else uses it, but it's Dave's. And so to me, when it comes to wrestling journalism, if that's the word you want to use for it, Meltzer is the brand. He's like Kleenex. He's like Band-Aid. He's like Coca-Cola. He's just the guy. And so if I'm going to present a podcast centered around one or the other, I'm going to go with Meltzer, the name that everybody knows, instead of trying to, you know, bring 1994 back to life and talk about the Torch.
Absolutely. And if anything, when we're fighting and arguing about whether we agree with the 4-star, 5-star, whatever, you're right. He's the one we're referencing on top to bottom, right?
He's the guy. And I'm not saying that the Torch sucks. It does. But I'm not saying that. I'm saying Bruce Mitchell is awesome. Jim Valley's okay. But Dave Meltzer is the king of wrestling journalism. And I don't think that's even debatable.
Well, he's getting both of our money, so I probably have to agree with you there. I actually do not subscribe to the Torch anymore. So, I mean, I just had to ask the question, obviously, for that reason, right?
I'll tell you, people are missing out if they don't subscribe to the Torch, because once upon a time, the thing that Wade did that separated himself from everybody else was really, really high-quality interviews, and so you would get a lot of good insight, and you didn't really ever get that from Dave Meltzer. Dave may talk to somebody, and then he'd spit out, you know, the story, but he wouldn't be quoting. And if you really want to get it in their own words, Keller was providing that. He still does. He did a phenomenal interview a few weeks ago where he had Sean Waltman kind of lay out exactly what happened in great detail with his arrest at the airport out in California. And you couldn't have gotten that in the same format if it wasn't a relationship that Wade had built with those interviews more than 20 years ago with Sean. So That is a great reason in and of itself to enjoy the Torch and digging through the old newsletters and just seeing how much the business has changed. The Torch is a great website, but, you know, Dave Meltzer's the man.
Right. Well, actually, you led me to another thing I wanted to ask you about, because another aspect of your podcast that I really, and it's obviously a little, you know, behind the scenes stuff here to ask, is that I enjoy the most about it is it's clearly there's a huge amount of research that you put in from week to week on both shows. You know, because I've had shows that I've wanted to do that I just said, I can't, you know, doing, trying to run all the other shows, I can't devote that kind of time. Like, we have a show now on our network that goes back and watches old pay-per-views and breaks them down and things like that. But I'm like, dude, that's a 3-hour commitment to a pay-per-view. And then I got to do the research before, the afters and all that. I said, I just didn't personally have that time to do that one show on top of everything else. But I mean, how much time do you really put in? Because I mean, I will tell you, that's one of the things I admire from the outside looking in, that I can tell you put a ton of work into it.
No, you're exactly right. We haven't really ever gauged the amount of time that we put into a show, as far as prep, but I can kind of freestyle for you. Like this week, for the Hulk Hogan show, I probably had about 12 hours, and that's before we click record. So then once we click record, you've got, you know, 3 hours there. So I've got 15 hours in this week's Hulk Hogan episode. Now, by comparison, this week's Tony Schiavone episode is going to be about Slamboree 2000, and I watched the pay-per-view, so there's 3 hours, and then I taped with him, and I did a little research. So that's probably 6 hours. Now, a lot of that is not necessarily based on the level of detail that one host provides compared to another, but Bruce does provide more detail because he had a different job description in the company. But it was about an entire year of Hulk Hogan's career, 1988. So you're talking about 365 days as compared to one single pay-per-view. So, you know, I can cover one 3-hour show and take 2 or 3 hours to talk about it, or I can cover 365 days and take 3 hours to talk about it. But I'm going to cover it as thoroughly as I think it needs to be covered.
And that's actually kind of it's funny. You're leading me from one subject to the next. Because the next thing I wanted to talk about is you have two shows that are very similar as far as the formats, you know, in the grand scheme of things, but they just feel so much different. And obviously one's from a WCW side, one's the WWF/E side. But is that kind of but of course their backgrounds of what they were doing at the time. Is that the biggest difference between those two is because of those things?
Yeah. I mean, yes and no. One of them is certainly the guy was there kind of on the inside. So he was privy to business decisions and all of the booking decisions and the hiring and the firing. And he was on the inner circle of everything. So he knew who handled what, when, where, why, and how. Tony was doing more television production, and he did have some other roles, but by and large, it was mostly on the TV side. So he wouldn't be as involved in all of the intricacies of marketing or promotion, et cetera. The other thing that you have there too, though, is, you know, Tony's a professional broadcaster. And so that's kind of what his skill set leans towards. He's supposed to be the guy driving. And on that show, I'm kind of the guy driving, and he's more color. With Bruce, though, Bruce is a natural born color man. And Bruce could sit down and do color for Impact Wrestling and Smash. And I know that nobody's clamoring for him to do that, but I'm just saying, anytime I tee something up to him, he hits a home run with it. He's funny. He's witty. He does great impressions. There's lots of storytelling that he can do that others just can't do, and not just with the knowledge, but just the way he weaves a story. And I think that's the bigger difference between the two, is just in their personalities, the way they would approach any broadcast. One is more play-by-play straight man, and one is more color.
And obviously the you know, Bruce's show is honestly my favorite podcast going right now, obviously. But Tony's close to home for me. He, you know, I'm right here just outside of Atlanta. I consider him probably one of the most underrated commentators ever. And it's hysterical because my wife didn't kind of get the inside joke the other night. We were watching TV, just to kind of let you know, I live about 10 minutes from Cool Ray Field, which is where the Gwinnett Braves play.
Oh, cool.
And a commercial came on advertising for tickets. Guess whose voice is selling the tickets?
Tony Schiavone.
And I'm waiting for the F-bomb. Of course, it's not coming, but she didn't get the joke when it was over. I said, but you know, so that's, I'm a huge fan of his. I grew up obviously in the Atlanta area. So Tony is all the way back to my childhood, you know, on the Superstation is the voice of WCW. So I do love the show, but Bruce is kind of, at the moment, I would have to say that he's kind of top of the food chain in the podcast world. And like I said, you're sitting on the top of, you know, two of the biggest podcasts going right now. So definitely love those two. But I wanted to take a second and go back just for a minute to Rick's podcast that you, I know he had two that you were involved in. You guys had guests on that show where you don't have guests on the current shows. Wanted to ask you a couple things about Rick's. Was there anybody that you wanted to get that you just didn't get around to getting?
Dusty Rhodes and Roddy Piper both agreed to be on, and then for various reasons had to cancel or reschedule, and then ultimately passed away. So those are the two that got away.
And then the other one is, I know I read it somewhere that you had put on there about that, you know, you were a Hogan guy growing up, you know, obviously because you were WWF at one point, and then later on became a Rick guy. So I was going to ask you, was Hogan the your favorite one that you did get? But then I wanted to ask you, though, I wanted to come back because I would have thought maybe the one I was most interested in when that podcast was going was the Bischoff because of the, you know, all the heat between the two that we had heard about. So which one of those, if I had to guess, were those two of your favorites, or did you have another one that's actually one of your favorites that you got on there?
It was a thrill to have Hulk Hogan on and to, you know, when we're setting it up, be texting with Hulk Hogan as a little Hulkamaniac, and then, you know, miss a call from him and him leave me a voicemail. To have a voicemail from Hulk Hogan is pretty damn cool as a wrestling fan. You know, as far as the actual wrestling nerd part of me and what we all enjoy about the podcast, I don't think you can beat those Bischoff episodes. I think you could go back and dig up those Bischoff episodes with me talking to him. And back then, of course, nobody knew I'm really an asshole who wants to grill people. And nobody knew that Bischoff, you know, was going to be doing a podcast. And so when I'm hitting him with all of that, it was a lot of new stuff. And I was a little more delicate in the way I approached it, but I got all the good stuff out of him. And it was so good. I wrote on a sheet of paper to Rick, so it wouldn't come through on the mic. We should stop and do a part two and keep this going and make this 2 weeks worth of content. And he followed my lead and we did. And to my surprise, a lot of times when people do a two-parter, they just talk for a really long time, one time, and then cut it up. Eric let us call him back the next day. So we got like over 3 hours, nearly 4 hours of good stuff out of Eric. And I think it's some of the best stuff that's ever happened on a podcast with Rick, Eric, and I.
I agree. I do remember those. And that's, I figured that might be it because you're kind of, it's some, I've done a little bit of research on you, obviously, and reading some interviews that you said where, like you said, you prefer like the podcast that kind of go behind the curtain a little bit more than just, you know, the wrestlers asking, you know, answering questions from fans, that kind of stuff. But I did want to ask you, because this was kind of a cool one, because I can't imagine as a fan, like you said, you just mentioned it, you got a voicemail, you know, from Hulk Hogan. You know, how, you know, rapping at it. So how does it feel then, though, when you're going to an arena and you're meeting these guys? Like, who's the guy that, did you ever get starstruck by somebody?
All the time. You know, WrestleMania 30 in New Orleans, I went with Rick, and it was my first WrestleMania, and he took me backstage, and I got to meet Roddy Piper and The Rock and Steve Austin and Hulk Hogan, and to meet all these guys and get my picture with them and have Ric Flair be the cameraman, that's like some make-believe stuff as a wrestling fan. I mean, literally everybody was there from Harley Race on down the line. It was outstanding. So as a wrestling fan, that's probably one of the coolest things I've ever gotten to do, but it is cool now to, you know, go backstage and visit, and there'd be so many of the people in the business who come over to say hello and tell me that they dig the podcast. That is so random to me that they know who I am. It's a humbling experience because I'm just a fan, and it's not lost on me that this isn't going to be forever. I'm not going to be a professional podcaster. I do mortgages. This is a fun hobby. But this wasn't really a thing 10 years ago, and it probably won't really be a thing 10 years from now. But for right now, it's pretty cool that in a business that, or an entertainment genre that I grew up watching, now the performers know who I am. That's kind of fucking cool.
Yeah. And then we'll kind of, I'll go behind the scenes. Obviously we, you know, seeing you the other night, I tried to be respectful and not, you know, come, I saw that you were with your family.
You should have came and said hello. It's fine.
I know, but I know it sounds really crazy. I have some friends who are, you know, indie guys. Some had made it a little more, you know, a little further than others. And I just have always kind of learn from them, kind of what you were, I've read some articles you talking about, just kind of learning like, okay, don't butt into the situation, but especially with, you know, family and kids involved. I always tell people if they're with their families, I never walk up to anybody. You know, mine's on a much smaller scale, but like I said, we've got wrestlers here in this area who are always, hey, this is Randy Rose, or, you know, this is such, you know, Mr. Wrestling number two, you know, back in the day, you know, introducing me to those guys. And it's just a real respectful thing. And whether you realize it or not, you've kind of crept into that, you know, in the podcast world, especially, you've reached that echelon where everybody's, like I said earlier, we're all chasing to be number two, because Conrad and Bruce and Conrad and Tony, they're, you know, they're kind of at the top of the food chain. And so I just wanted to be respectful and not, you know, like I said, interrupt family time, as I like to, you know, say. And I, you know, if it was ever just you, obviously I would have walked up, said, hey, how you doing? Nice to meet you, that kind of thing. But anyway, I totally understand the feeling of what you're saying, just on a much, much smaller scale, as far as being with, even with those guys, you know, like I said, I can't imagine just being out and about. Now that's because it's going to lead me to my next question is, and it not throwing anybody under the bus, nothing that's going to incriminate anybody. But do you have any of those cool, like, on the road with those guys stories?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the greatest story of all time from traveling for wrestling like this is SummerSlam, the last SummerSlam in L.A. So 2-3 years ago, 14 probably, I go out to L.A. and hang out with Rick, and we decide we're going to go to this Asian restaurant, like, I don't know, 19 blocks down the street from where the company hotel is. So we, of course, have been at the hotel bar, and we're like, ah, let's just get a cab. So we get a cab, and it doesn't go exactly as it should. And Rick cut a 1985 promo, and there was violence threatened and guns threatened. And we got out of the cab, but we weren't asked to pay. Well, it was something to see. It was the wrong way down a one-way street. It was Jim Crockett Promotions 1985 all over again. And then, of course, we just find our seat at the bar and order our food, and it's business as usual.
But that's life with being riding along with the Nature Boys. Is that what you're saying?
I mean, we've been in bars before where they didn't have a liquor license and they could only serve beer. And $100 later, here comes a bottle. It's just the level of fame and notoriety and access that Ric Flair gets is unlike anybody I've ever really known. I can't imagine what it must be like for someone like The Rock, who's not just like wrestling 20 years ago famous, but really famous. But just because of the silly access and falling all over themselves that people do for Rick, I can't imagine what it would be for someone like The Rock.
And one thing about the guy is he comes off, now, again, never met him, wouldn't say, but he just comes off as the most humble guy.
Rick?
Both. Rick and The Rock, both. I mean, Rock is who I was talking about, you know, because he's been in our small town, believe it or not, just up the street working out at the gym, as nice as can be, as humble as can be to anybody.
The Rock is the coolest guy ever. Super polite, super respectful, makes everyone feel like they're special, gives them a lot of time, shakes their hand, makes eye contact, isn't playing on his phone, just dismissive. He's very attentive. It's no wonder that he's as successful as he is. If you were going to say Rick, I'm going to say, well, it depends on if you're a veteran, have a disability, or a beautiful woman, or what time of day it is.
Then it'll depend on his level of humbleness.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, if you look like me or you and make your approach and ask for a picture, you're going to need a tag team partner to make that happen at the right time of day, or a really respectful approach at the right time of day.
Yeah, he's another one that I got this one. I got a lot of grief about this. I did see him at a bar one night, and everybody's like, go see him. You've always wanted. And I said, and it's kind of the same attitude, I guess. Maybe it's just my upbringing. I was just told don't, you know, that's not, don't bother them kind of thing. But no, obviously wouldn't, but he was, I can see everybody bothering him. I'm like, ah, just leave the guy alone. But you know, especially he's an old guard too, compare, you know, Rock and him are two different generations. So it's okay. But you know, do you have, I guess the story I wanted to hear is you got to have a Michael Hayes story buried in you somewhere.
I do, but I'm not going to tell them.
can't tell those on the.
I have more Michael Hayes stories than I could ever share on this podcast. Michael Hayes is the coolest dude that ever lived. He gets a bad rap from wrestling fans. He's hilarious. And I've just never had a bad time with him. However, he's still actively employed there, and we'd probably like to keep it that way. So I'm just going to leave it at, he's a very nice man.
Well, and you know, one thing I always like to ask, because I always like to go back to our childhood, I'm kind of going to move away a little bit from the podcasting thing and ask you a couple questions. I just like to go back and find out people who've been in this. Like I said, I'm 43. I've been watching. When you mentioned the Dusty thing, there's a great, it's in our archives. There's a story where I told a, you know, I'm a grown man and I don't cry ever when stars, you know, like, you know, when famous people pass away, I feel bad for their families, but I don't cry. My wife caught me, you know, she looks at me when she, I heard the news Dusty died. I'm bawling like a baby. And she says, why? I'm like, because 3 years old, I was sitting on my great grandfather's lap watching Dusty Rhodes.
Right.
You know, that's the bonding moment.
I think a lot of us grew up with wrestling, and that's what keeps us watching it. And I know a lot of people get annoyed when I talk about it like this, but I really do feel like, you know, if you were to ask my dad who the greatest quarterback of all time is, you know, he's going to say Roger Staubach. But that's not the answer. It's Tom Brady. But, you know, he would say Roger Staubach because that's who he grew up with. And if you were to ask, you know, who some of his favorite movie stars are, he would probably include John Wayne. And he might, you know, somebody mine and your age may say something completely different. We might hit him with a De Niro or a Pacino, but everybody's just really fond of what they grow up on. My dad wakes up early every morning and watches old reruns of Gunsmoke. I would never watch Gunsmoke or Bonanza. My dad loves that stuff, and it's old stuff that reminds him of when he was growing up and he was a kid. And like, my dad wants an old antique Corvette now. Now, the new Corvettes would blow the doors off of it and are probably way more comfortable and have better gas mileage and better technology and are better rated for safety. But that's not the one my dad grew up wanting. And so you've got all those little things that people look back on that make them happy. And I think that's kind of what we're all still chasing with wrestling. We want it to be like it was when we were little or what we remember. And so much of, you know, when you were a little kid, you lived in a big house. You go back as an adult and you realize, hey, that house wasn't that big. And it's just one of those things where your perspective changes and you look back with rose-colored glasses and you think that the Attitude Era was great. But if I strapped you to a chair and made you watch a random Raw from 1998, it might not be so great. You'd still have a couple things in there you really dug, but it's not this end-all be-all that we have kind of romanticized.
We just had that. We'll call it a debate on a past episode where I tried to, you know, because again, we had the controversy that Sheamus made the comments about how much better the athletes were today than they were back in the Attitude Era. I'm sure you heard about all that.
They are.
And they are. And that's actually the funny part, because I took that stance and I'm the oldest one in the group. And everybody thought I should take the Attitude Era. And I'm like, guys, I don't know if you remember, the Attitude Era wasn't the best. You know, it wasn't the best time. I don't think so. But I'm 43, and I remember, you know, the Midnight Express, Rock and Roll Express, Road Warriors, Dusty Rhodes, Barry Windham. To me, that's the best. But it goes back to what you just said, because that's what it was when I was a kid.
Right.
So what was yours? Like, when you were the kid, who, you know, when there's a little Conrad, who, you know, who's he watching on the TV getting you hooked into the wrestling business?
Hulk Hogan and Macho Man Randy Savage, WrestleMania 4 VHS, 1988. It was the summer or fall. I was at my grandfather's house. He lived in another part of the state. We were up visiting. He went to the video store because that was a thing people did back in the day. And you could rent, you know, one movie for $3 or three for 10, or I don't know how that works, but you know, five for 10, whatever it is. So he rented a bunch of movies. And so what he picked for me was these old video cassettes, and they weren't old. They were the new WrestleMania VHSs in 1988. I was hooked, man, and I started watching the TV and getting the magazines and collecting the action figures, and I was all about it. And that is what got me hooked, WrestleMania 4, Hulk Hogan, Macho Man.
And it's funny, you're a little young, you're obviously younger than I was. I was sitting in my head, I was thinking, you know, Bruce's brother is one of the guys that I grew up on. Tom and Bob Armstrong and that group from Continental is a huge, and we actually have a guy who comes on our show who writes a lot about that Southeastern territory. So I'm, like I said, my age is obviously a little bit further back, but let's come to the current, where I wanted to ask you about some of the, you know, hey, is this okay? I was to say, well, let's talk about some current stuff. other than the podcast stuff, I want to know what's your current take on the current product in the WWE. I'm assuming, and I'm going to ask you right out, one of the questions I had saved for later, but I'm going to ask you up front, is Impact Wrestling something that you do on a weekly basis, or are you just really primarily WWE guy?
No, I'll watch Impact. I can't say that I've always watched Impact, but when Broken Matt started, I threw it in my DVR, and I used to watch Impact all the time. They used to run pay-per-views less than 2 hours from my door when they were in Nashville, so I'd go up on Wednesdays, and I was actually one of the early – I was at the first TNA shows here in Huntsville. I had floor seats right at the bottom of the hill from where I live, and I was in. And I kept that up. I started ordering all the Wednesday pay-per-views, and I was in. And then I got out of wrestling for a little while, but before I got out, they had their first big pay-per-view in Orlando. I was there. And I wanted them to succeed. I wanted this to be something that could have some life and grow. And it's never felt like it really grew the way we all hoped it might. But somehow, it's outlasted ECW and at this point, even WCW. So good for them. But no, it's not something I can say that I'm passionate about, but I feel like they're all kind of in a state of flux right now. I do feel like they'll have a much different identity a year from now, and I'm excited to see what that looks like. And I'm not here to plug or promote Impact. I still watch the show and fast forward. But I did hear this week that my dude, the Black Pope, said my name on the air. So roll tide for that, Mr. Pope. I appreciate that. I haven't had my name set on a wrestling television show ever before, so I appreciate that.
Well, you have now, so you'll definitely watch that one live to catch it, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to save that to my DVR forever, and then when out-of-town guests come over, I'm going to start playing it right before they come over so I can just make them feel like I'm a bigger deal than I really am.
Yeah, you know. So we will move into, I figured you probably had gotten to watch it some, because I would be honest, I hadn't watched Impact in a long time. I had assigned that to somebody else here at the network to watch. But with Bruce coming in and, Jeff coming in and Dutch coming in, I was like, you know what, I'll give it a shot. I'll come back and give them, because if nothing else, that was at kind of at their peak, Jeff was there. And so I was like, I'll give it a shot and go and see. But let's move over. I'm going to ask you a couple things I wanted to know. Obviously, being friends with Rick, I was going to ask you a little bit about Charlotte. I'm going to go book, Charlotte and what they're doing over on SmackDown right now. I wanted to ask your take on the Money in the Bank women's match that they just made. Like, what's your take on them actually having a women's Money in the Bank match?
I'm excited about it. I know there's been a little bit of criticism when people are kind of mocking it, calling it a Mommy in the Bank and saying it shouldn't be a briefcase. It should be a purse. I think some of that stuff is a little, low class, because we've seen that these girls are working really, really hard to kind of break some of that stigma. And if we want to encourage them to have these classic matches, and I think everybody agrees that Natalya and Charlotte have had some, and Charlotte and Sasha have had some, and certainly Bayley and Sasha have had some, just really clinics. I'm not going to say they're five-star matches, but just outstanding, especially when you consider where it was. And so that's one of the things I'm always kind of gauging everything by, is not is it the best match I've ever seen, but how much better is it than what we were watching a year ago? And I think when you look at the type of women's wrestling we're watching right now in June of 2017, and you compare it to, say, June of 2015, wow, what a difference. And if you just continue going, I mean, it gets better and better and bigger, the gap. And I'm excited that they have the opportunity to do it. A lot of people were critical of could they pull off a Hell in a Cell. I think they probably botched that, not the women, but the WWE. Instead of making a women's cage match feel special, they made it one of three cage matches and put it on last. So after everybody else had done all their craziness, now it's can you top this? That's an unwinnable position. Had they just had one Hell in a Cell match and it was the women, then it would really feel special. I'm hoping that they have an opportunity to really look and feel special, but I'm not so sure since they're going to be on the same card with the men doing the same thing. And I don't ever want the women to feel like they are second best. And I feel like when you're positioning it with guys who have been doing this a long time, it's going to have to feel like it's the second best.
Yeah, I actually had this. It's funny. I had the same argument where I had said, if they were going to have a women's, I felt it should have been the only one.
Yeah.
I mean, why not? I mean, because we had the same debate back when there were the multiple Hell in a Cell matches. I said, the worry I have sometimes with pay-per-views, where they're heading, is they pigeonhole by saying, like, we have to have an Extreme Rules pay-per-view. We have to have a Money in the Bank. Why can't we move those to when we need them versus having them at the same month every year? And but once we did say we're going to have a Money in the Bank, I said, can it just be the women? Because we have a guy on the network that he is 100% convinced. He's all in with the women. And I mean by that, he's like, he would rather see the women's match than a lot of the men's matches on most of the pay-per-views. And he's super psyched. My only concern, trust me, I'm super happy. I'm glad they're getting an opportunity. I just worry about their personal health. You know, those ladders are bulky. They don't always cooperate. I just worry about their safety. And I know that's what they do, but it still concerns me because if nothing else, I still say they're beautiful women. You know, they're women nonetheless. I just worry about the, you know, as far as the ladders go, because even the men struggle with those ladders from time.
Yeah, I mean, I hear you on that, but at the same time, if we're really going to allow them the opportunity, you know, the women don't wrestle on different mats or different turnbuckles or different ropes or different canvas, so let them use the same ladder. And I know that may sound like I'm saying, oh, screw the women, but if you're going to do what the men are doing and you want to be taken seriously and not as less than, then you need to do it, and not part of the way, but all the way, because if we're starting to deviate and they use, you know, a different type of ladder or a different type of gimmick match, well, hell, let's just put them back in bra and panties and throw them in pudding.
Yeah. And that's kind of where I ultimately had to come to the grips with, is I finally did say, but if you're going to do it, it has to be the same. Let them play on the same field. You know, but then again, right now, is anybody, and you can go back to the last year of our podcast history and hear, I have tooted Charlotte's horn from jump. I don't know that anybody, and I'll throw, because somebody argued back with Randy Orton, who I totally appreciate, but I look at her sometimes and go, there was somebody born to be in this business, it was her, because she's a natural.
I don't even think she really thought she was, and still sometimes she wonders, but she is definitely so far ahead of where many other wrestlers are at this point in their career. I mean, I think she's just like 4 years in. So 4 years in and already, you know, multiple time champion. And I know a lot of people will say, oh, well, that's nepotism. I disagree. It's consistency of matches. It's the hours that she works, her willingness to do everything. She hasn't ever missed a day of work. She's never had a day off. She's never missed a shot. She's never been injured. She's kind of like the Iron Woman in that regard. So when you're out doing company PR 24/7, you're doing movies, you're doing TV shows, you're doing all your media appearances, you're doing your photo shoots, you're doing your commercials. And oh, by the way, you're on every single house show. You're on every single European tour. She hasn't missed a single tour. I can't help but feel like you were made for this. And I'm not so much saying about just the in-ring performance part, but I'm saying when people think about Rick, they talk about him as being the last touring world champion, because Rick was on the road all the time. And no matter, you know, what sort of retrospective you watch on Rick, there's always a segment where they talk about how much time he spent on the road. And they usually chop up a bunch of old promos where he's just naming towns back to back to back to back to back. That's her life. And there'll be a month or 6 week stretch where she's not home at all because the company has just kept her on the road. And that's not human. That's not normal. So I agree with you. She's definitely a natural fit for this business.
Now, somebody who is a fit, I always thought was a fit for the business, but maybe not for the travel and the road. I did want to get your take on, because, you know, we have a huge debate on our show back and forth about Brock Lesnar as the Universal Champion and the lack of appearances, you know, of him being the champion, whereas I don't necessarily have a problem with it because I kind of think I understand where they're going with it. But what's your take on having a champion that's gone for chunks of time?
What does it matter? I'm not saying that to be a smartass. I'm just saying, at the end of the day, what does it matter? I remember as a kid, I came to house shows for the WWF. Guess who wasn't there?
The world champion's never there, hardly.
Hulk Hogan was not on the show.
Yeah.
He's your biggest star. And let's run through that, too. Let's go figure out who's really going to house shows. And then, not all, but a big, huge chunk of the folks going to the house shows are kids or families, parents with their kids. Would they rather see John Cena or the world champion? If they had to pick, they'd pick John Cena all day. And so that's my thing, is I feel like at the end of the day, this whole I'm getting to see the world champion, that mattered once upon a time when the world champion still meant something. It doesn't mean anything anymore. you know, when you think back to boxing, once upon a time, when Muhammad Ali was the champ, it was a big deal. When Mike Tyson was the champ, it was a big deal. I'm a boxing fan, so I know. But can you name three world heavyweight champions right now, boxer?
No, because I think the last champion I could have named, I think he just lost.
So you got Joshua, you got Fury, and then you got our Bama boy, Roll Tide. But at the end of the day, it's still a situation where that doesn't matter. Like, you don't even know who they are. So it's not, to me, a big deal. To me, it's a matter of when it comes time for the big shows, and I'm not saying the throwaway pay-per-views along the way, because that kind of is the way they've positioned themselves, is just throwaway pay-per-views. But when it's not something that, you know, like people are already planning SummerSlam visits and trips and weeks, and people have already started planning right now their New Orleans trip next year, almost a year from now, WrestleMania next year. People are already planning their vacation and their whole stay. They're not necessarily doing that for Extreme Rules. And those pay-per-views and those events, because they're not pay-per-views anymore, you're going to have a main attraction for the world title. And that's okay if that's when Brock is there. And I was kind of taken a little bit aback that they started putting Shinsuke's matches on SmackDown. I guess they're just looking to pop a rating, but I felt like they were positioning him that, hey, if you want to see Nakamura wrestle, you got to buy a ticket. I think that would be smart. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. When you think back to when Ric Flair was the champ, I mean, way back in the day, how often did you see Ric Flair have studio matches? Not very often. And if you did see him have a studio match, it was with an enhancement talent. It wasn't ever, very rarely, was it ever him putting on, you know, the title on the line. He would have an enhancement match and then talk about tonight at the Omni, Dusty Rhodes, it's your turn. That's a totally different deal. So I'm okay with the way they're doing this. And the people who are butthurt, the fans who are butthurt about saying, oh, but he's a part-timer, so the guy who works the most dates should be champion? Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. That's stupid. If that was true, then Michael Elgin should be the world champion, because I think over WrestleMania weekend he had 411 matches.
And my thing is with champions, I grew up late 70s, early 80s. I grew up in Florida for part of my, you know, the early part of my life. And I could go, I felt like a year where I didn't see Ric Flair or Harley Race or Terry Funk. It was just a cycle through. The champion was the, you know, the Southern heavyweight champion, which would be whoever. And you had to earn your way to fight Rick, who were, like I said, or Harley or Terry or whoever was coming into town. And that's kind of where I'm at now. I just said, maybe they just have to prove they're worth him coming in and fighting.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a fan of there being something that you've got to pay to see and something to look forward to, because I don't think you can have it both ways. I feel like if we had a champion defending his world title every week on Raw, well, you're going to be more susceptible to losing. And a kayfabe explanation, you know, the UFC guys fight three or four times a year. Boxers fight once or twice a year. If a boxer was fighting every week, then hell yeah, the damn title would bounce around like a fish. I mean, he's fighting 52 times a year. So logically, I'm okay with, if I have to pick one, the belt bouncing around a lot, or it being on one guy who's not here all the time and everybody's fighting for their shot against him. I'm fine with that.
Yeah, and that goes back to one of my beefs with wrestling as a whole, which, by the way, obviously I love wrestling. If I'm doing this for a living, I'm obviously a fan and love it. But one of the things I always – it's not wrestling's fault, I don't think. I always come back to, it's a generational issue where everybody wants their instant gratification. So we have to go from one pay-per-view to the next, to the next, to the next, and we want it now. And we see the champions fighting on every Raw. We see Kevin Owens losing 2 weeks in a row on Raw, you know. And it just, I'm like, can we just not spread this out back? And again, because it goes back to what we talked about earlier, it was better back in the day when we were younger, and that's what we saw, is it spread out. But I would think it would be more, it makes the titles more prestigious if you do not see them week in and week out defended on Raw and SmackDown over and over and over again. Would you agree?
I do agree. And, you know, when you're talking about spread out, a lot of people used to say, oh, I really like when they have these storylines and, you know, the long storylines, and, you know, where you'd start something 3 months out and it would build. But then when they don't get it immediately on the week they want it, they're fired up. And so that's my thing. A lot of times when people are upset, it's like, dude, it's not over. Let it keep playing out. And so many people were mad when Jinder Mahal got a world title shot against Randy Orton. And then they were mad when Jinder won. But I think so many of those fans were just weren't going to be happy either way, because so many were saying, oh my God, same old crap. Randy Orton wins another Royal Rumble. He's in the main event. I'm so tired of Randy Orton in the main event for the world title. Fast forward, Randy Orton's in the world title match against Jinder. And where they were screaming 3 months ago, I want something new. I'm tired of this. Give me something new. They give you something new, and you're like, oh, this guy's a jobber. Who is he? I wanted something new. This is new. He would never beat Randy. This is what do you want? Like, to me, it's clear what they're trying to do here. America's hero, the face that runs the place, is filming a television show right now called American Grit. What day of the week is the 4th of July on this year? Because when I look at my calendar, it feels like it's a Tuesday. Let it play out. Calm down.
We just had that again, the same similar conversation where I tweeted out the night he won. I said, bitch all you know, bitch and complain you want something new. Bitch and complain this isn't what I wanted. But like I said, the whole Jinder Mahal thing, and I said the same thing last week, just let it play out. There's a storyline. And I go, but the problem is the generation hasn't been trained that this storyline might be 6 months from now as the payoff. They wanted it right now.
You know, some of my favorite movies, you don't get the payoff till the very end. And 22, 23 years ago, there was a movie called The Usual Suspects, and you spent 2 hours listening to a story with everything kind of pieced together, and you thought you had it all figured out, and then at the very last minute you realize that this story they've been laying the seeds for, it's not just a mindless swerve just for the sake of doing a swerve. They have been laying the groundwork this whole time right in front of you. They were putting a story out there that you didn't see that they reveal at the very end, and it was phenomenal. And when we can go back and look at wrestling the same way and say, oh, it makes sense now, because remember when, and you see those little seeds, that's when I think wrestling is really at its best.
When they do the slow burn, you know, I always hear Bruce say that slow burn, we were getting there. They were planting seeds at, you know, SummerSlam for WrestleMania. And I think that's what they need more of. And we just, you know, hey, I always tell people this, I'm just a fan, you know, giving my opinion. But speaking of opinions, I did want to ask you two more things before I let you go. I did want to ask you about the controversy with Randy Orton's comments about the high spots, the diving, all, you know, it stemmed from Rip Rogers' original tweet and kind of steamrolled down. But what was your take on the whole indie scene and the dives and that kind of stuff?
Well, I mean, I get both sides. I enjoy indie wrestling. I enjoy WWE wrestling. I am friends with people on the main roster, so I certainly get their perspective too. You know, at the end of the day, it's not just wrestling. It's the wrestling business, and so you do have to keep in mind the business aspect of it. And by that, I mean the longevity of the performer, the amount of revenue that they're drawing the company. You know, what are they bringing in? But at the same time, you know, what type of money they're making per bump. I feel like the best explanation that I've ever heard about this is all wrestlers kind of have a bump card. So, you know, it's a dozen years ago, Subway used to have like the Subway sandwich cards, and they'd punch your sandwich card, and on your so-and-so one, you got a free one, whatever it was. And a lot of like shoe stores did that, like Just for Feet in my area did it, where your 12th pair is free. And that was kind of a common thing. And the idea was when your card's full, that's it. And I feel like wrestlers are the same way. The human body can take so much, and then it's like, okay, that's enough. Things start to break down. And if you keep pushing it, more things break down. And the further you do this, the worse off it gets. Kind of like if you carried one of those sandwich cards around in your wallet, not just for a month, not just for a year, but a decade, eventually, hey, it's time to hang it up. So along the way, how much did you make a bump? Now, that sounds silly, but ultimately, that's what you're doing for a living. You're trading your time, and you're also trading your body. And what are you trading it for? And so I think that's Randy's point, is he's trading his body for a significant financial reward, but also a really, really high-level exposure. And a lot of the indie guys are trying to make a name for themselves, and it's easy for him to say, oh, you're doing this. Randy never had to do that. Randy never had to work to get anyone's attention. I think Kevin Owens probably would have toned his style down a whole lot faster had he made it to the WWE 8 years ago. If Kevin Owens was on the main roster in 2008, 2009, I don't know that Kevin Owens would be hurting. And I'm not saying he's hurting now, but I'm saying anybody who's kept up with his career knows that that dude took a lot of crazy bumps and took a lot of risk, and it was clearly worth it because he got where he wanted to be. But had he gotten there faster, he may have toned some of that down. And that's not exactly what the WWE is looking for, but what they are looking for is someone who has some buzz about them. And Randy never had to generate that buzz because Randy was born into a wrestling family. Randy's dad could make a phone call and get a look. Kevin Owens' dad couldn't make a phone call and get a look. So Kevin Owens jumped off 19 ladders through flaming tables, doing a 450 Hurricane Rana on barbed wire and whatever. And some people would say, oh, well, I would never do that. Well, not everybody's dad is an Orton or a Flair. And they can't just make that call. So you've got to get yourself noticed. And I respect the indie guys for doing that. But I do understand Randy's point of, hey, man, don't give all your bumps away for nothing. Save some for when you're here. But to their point, how the hell did we get there?
Right. It was funny. I had a, I just had this past Saturday, I was at a show, and an old veteran, he'd been in the business 25 years, and they were doing a double shot. Go figure how that still happens these days, right? And he said they were going to one of these bar shows, you know, kind of thing.
Right.
And he was like, hey, it's going to be, you know, they asked him, was he going? He said, no. Why not? Because this is one of them bar shows, and it's going to be, they're going to want to see, you know, blood on the floor. And he goes, and I just, if it doesn't make any sense, why do it? And I say the same thing a lot about the indie guys. I'm like, I understand that they got to make their statement and be seen. But sometimes I'm always like, tone it back a hair just to save your body a little bit for the long term. And, you know, so that way, and God bless him. I feel horrible for him because sometimes we always come back to Daniel Bryan is probably that the biggest example of somebody who had to get noticed. And then when he got there, his card was full, shorter than it should have been.
Daniel Bryan, in my opinion, is the best wrestler of my lifetime. I was a big Bryan Danielson fan. I would encourage everybody listening, if you're a really hardcore wrestling fan, go out of your way to find a DVD. Nobody's ever told you this either, by the way. It's Ring of Honor Main Event Spectacles, and it is absolutely phenomenal. It's not a card that lots of people will talk about, but I had seen a lot of his matches, but this was the one that really solidified him to me as not just a top guy, but the top guy. It happened in 2003 in New Jersey, and he had a match with AJ Styles for the world title number one contendership trophy. That was really a thing. And those guys wrestled a phenomenal match, and it was so good that they had their announcers, Gabe was one of them at the time, just lay out. So there's no commentary for the majority of the match, and you're just in it. And to see how realistic Danielson presents himself, it's next level. Like, you really suspend disbelief, not because of a personal issue between the two, just between the athleticism, because so much of what he does makes logical sense. It's not a lot of silliness. Not there's anything wrong with that. I think there is a spot for that. But when you watch this, just for a minute, you thought, is this MMA or is this pro wrestling? And I don't mean that in a boring way. There's still lots of entertaining pro wrestling stuff in there, but that's when I was convinced Daniel Bryan, Bryan Danielson at the time, is the best wrestler in the world. And that was evidence to me when he continued to win the Wrestler of the Year award and the Wrestling Observer. Of course, Rick won it so many times they renamed it. So it's not just the Luthez Award. Now it's the Luthez Ric Flair Wrestler of the Year award. But if Daniel Bryan wouldn't have been injured, you can't convince me that eventually it wouldn't be the Luthez Ric Flair Daniel Bryan award, because that dude is next level. And it's a shame that so many WWE fans who are younger, like my daughter, she only knows yes, yes, Daniel Bryan. There's nothing wrong with that. But, man, let's get rid of the yes, yes. Let's go see the real Ring of Honor, Bryan Danielson, when he was able to do the type of matches he wanted. And if he wanted to go 90 minutes with Austin Aries, he could. We'll never see another wrestler like Bryan Danielson ever again.
The rumors float out there. I'm going to ask you, do you think he will ever – will he ever wrestle again? Because the rumors are always float out there when his contract is up that he's going to try.
100% he will wrestle again. And I'm going to give you this. It'll be in the WWE. I know a lot of people are going to say no because everybody says the doctor, blah, blah, blah. They will, when push comes to shove, if Vince has to have him sign a stack of papers that make sure that he's not held responsible and they can keep him under contract and put him in the type of matches he wants to be in and work a limited schedule, but put him in a featured spot, or let him go draw eyeballs to somebody else now that he's a white hot character, even though he'd been off TV for a few years. If Bryan Danielson showed up tomorrow on Impact Wrestling, the internet would explode. If he showed up in New Japan or Ring of Honor, the internet would explode. Instantly, those promotions are much bigger and have a much greater shot at generating big time revenue. Nobody's ever going to make billions like Vince, but I mean, it will grow their business by a multiple here in the United States. I really do believe that. Vince is not going to let that happen, not because he needs a little more money, but because he doesn't want his competition to have a little more. And he'll tie them up, and he'll get a stack of waivers, and they'll let him come back and have six or eight matches a year, and he'll be fine.
That's what I was going to ask. You think it's – obviously, I made the same argument with somebody recently that Vince isn't going to let him go. He's not going to let him show up on somebody else's TV anywhere, even if he just says they meet in the middle and it's a couple matches a year. And he's only going to put him in there with guys he trusts. He's not going
to – He's wrestling WrestleMania. He's wrestling SummerSlam. And he'll probably wrestle a house show in his town, you know, his hometown, and, you know, maybe a network special in Japan or something. That's happening. That's happening. And there's just no way you can convince me. Because the thing is, you know, what little I've learned about this is the one test that the WWE is saying he got a bad result on and they're not going to let him compete is a test that not one other wrestler on the roster has gotten. And so when I learned that, it was like, well, hang on. What about Dolph Ziggler? I'm not knocking Dolph, but Dolph's had concussions. Are you going to tell me that somehow Daniel Bryan and a guy like Kane, who's been on the road for 25 years, I mean, on and on and on, you know, there's just dozens of guys there who've had concussion issues. And I'm not saying that there's anything necessarily wrong with any of them. I'm just saying we're all still learning about CTE, and we're kind of doing this together. But if we're going to say, no, we got a bad result on this, but then later you learn, well, this is the only time this test has been done with a WWE performer. It's like, well, shit. If you're going to do it to everybody. And if it's not good because he's putting his life at risk, why wouldn't you want to know if this is working, if this is the case for all your other performers? Maybe it's one of those deals where if we don't know, then we can't be held responsible. But now that we know for him, we don't want to be held responsible, so we're not going to let him do it. Well, how is that any different from not testing the other wrestlers? Just go ahead and let him sign a stack of waivers, and at least he knows, hey, you could be jacked up, but if you still want to go, sign these sheets of papers. Meanwhile, everybody else could be jacked up, but it's a don't ask, don't tell policy.
Right. It's the wellness policy as a whole, I think, has been a good thing for the business. But like I said, I totally agree. See, I was not aware of that, obviously, that you know nobody else has been tested. If they're going to test him, test everybody. Or if they're not going to test everybody, you can't test him. I completely agree. But speaking of, you know, with bodies, and I trust me, this is with all due respect. I did want two more names, and I promise I'll let you go. One, and they're tied together hand in hand at this point. I'm going to end with first. I want to ask you about, you know, has Taker wrestled his last match?
Yes.
And what did you think of that match at the end?
I'm glad it's over. I don't mean that in a negative, funny, ha-ha way, disparaging anybody. I'm just saying I'm glad that he got to go out in the last match on a WrestleMania card, one of the biggest WrestleManias ever, the biggest WrestleMania set ever, with the production they did for not only his entrance but leaving the hat and the jacket in the ring. And he went out against who will undoubtedly be their next guy. I mean, whether we like it or not, Roman Reigns is going to be the next John Cena. And I don't think there'll ever be a John Cena, but he's going to be our next thing closest to it. And that's the way The Undertaker would want to do it. He would want to put over the next guy. And I think he's done. He got to go out on his terms. He's been hurting for a long time. If you go back and you look at interviews from like 1996, you'll hear guys talk about they don't think Undertaker has many more matches in him. He's hurting. He's got hips and knees and just joint trouble. Kevin Nash was talking about that in shoot interviews in 1997. So there's no telling how long this guy has hung around, just a little too long. But we kind of all knew this was coming when his schedule got reduced to essentially WrestleMania every year. I want him to be done. I want him to live a happy life. If he's able to get this hip surgery and now be okay, man, good for him.
Absolutely. And I can't lie. One of the second moments in their wrestling that you kind of choke up a little bit, the emotion, you know, the hat in the ring, the exit, you know, we just, it was a very emotional, because I guess in our wrestling lifetime, I'm one of the, you know, I'm so old at this point, I remember Texas Red and World Class. And so that history, you know, everybody thought, we joke about TV shows. Well, my TV show with Undertaker has been, you know, it's like 30 years plus.
Right.
You know, watching him. So that was, but then, so the hard part comes with, like, you kind of walked me to, it was the Roman Reigns side of the story. There's a great debate even over on our network about Roman Reigns, babyface, heel, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. You know, but as I've come to accept from a lot of just opinions is, you know, I want your opinion on it. You know, everybody says turn him heel, and I think that's a mistake at this point. I clamored for it for 6 months, and finally it's like, at this point, I think we've reached the level of you just have to leave him be. What's your take on Roman and his spot right now?
I think so many people don't understand what the word over means. And I'm not saying that to be a smartass. I'm just saying I feel like there's a lot of people who confuse the term over with cheers. Those are different things. Ric Flair was over as a heel. How do I know? People booed. They didn't sit on their hands. And that's what I mean is, if you're going to get over, you've got to elicit a reaction, whether it's good or bad, pro or con, positive or negative. Give me something. And the people are not lukewarm to him. They have a strong reaction one way or the other. And as long as you're getting a strong reaction, man, keep doing it.
It's the Cena reaction is what a lot of people are calling it now. And did you see the there's a meme about it floating right now. But I actually remember I was speaking to another wrestler, and we were talking about that promo that he cut. And I call it his best promo ever, where he barely spoke. But while the crowd's going nuts, if you read his lips, he goes, "I've got them right in the palm of my hand."
Yeah, and sometimes when you really think back to famous WrestleMania moments, I think if I was to ask what's the biggest moment from WrestleMania 18, people would say it's Hogan, Rock. And it's not necessarily them doing leg drops or them punching each other. It's when they're looking at each other and then they both look left or right at the crowd. Them looking at the crowd and then looking at each other, you're really soaking in the magnitude of how big this moment is. And obviously it's a totally different situation and a totally different moment in time. But when Roman was just quiet that day, that's what that was to me.
As I told somebody, that was the moment that I realized, and I know it doesn't matter what I think, but I felt like, okay, everybody that says he can't wrestle, you've not watched his matches at all, to, you know, he can't cut a promo. I went, that right there is, he gets it. He finally, it was blatantly obvious that he gets it. And just the silence was better than anything. And by the way, you must have been, in our archives, we did a top 10 WrestleMania moment show. And that Rock Hogan moment is my number one.
It's awesome. And I don't know how anybody could disagree that it's awesome. And they're not even doing anything. Mm-hmm. They're not cutting promos. They're not talking. They're not doing anything physical. They're looking at each other and then left and right. And it's awesome.
It was just the sheer emotion. Because I tried to tell everybody wants to see the match. And I'm like, but I pointed to it, you know, when I actually had a friend of mine who had never seen that match. And I pointed to it and go, this right here is what wrestling is. And he goes, well, they're not doing anything. I go, but listen. And he said, I got it. I go, that's wrestling.
Yeah. By the way, have you seen the old Glenn Goza, that's wrestling video?
No.
Oh, my gosh. Everybody listening right now should just type that in their Google machine. Glenn Goza, G-L-E-N Goza, G-O-Z-A. And there's a YouTube video called Glenn Goza Sings Wrestling, R-A-S-S-L-I-N. And it is phenomenal. It happened at an old World Class show in Fort Worth in September of 84. They're doing a stadium show for World Class. And, man, it's something else.
and I grew up on that. Here in Atlanta, I don't know, did you guys get, there was a show that Joe Pedicino hosted here, and I know that name has come up on your, I listened to that Global show, and I heard the name come up, but he hosted a show here in Atlanta where it was like an 8-hour block of wrestling, and World Class just happened to be on it. It was Continental, it was Memphis, it was a bunch of, and that's why my background, when everybody goes, well, what did you watch? I'm like I said, it was Continental, it was Memphis, it was WWF, it was AWA, it was, I mean, you know, they, of course, back in the day, they had Glow thrown in there and all the other stuff in the world in there. But just, you know, that World Class, even that time period as a whole, I really, really dug all of the old school stuff. And of course, I'm just showing my age, I guess, more than anything. But that's just kind of my time and my day. But, man, Conrad, you know, I don't want to hold you any longer, man. I know I've had you for over an hour now, and I'd love to have you back on someday, talk more wrestling. But before we get you out of here, man, I always love any guest I have on, plug away, let them know where they can find you, where they can find the show, Twitter, et cetera, all that good stuff.
Well, I'm on Twitter at Hey Hey It's Conrad. That's HEYHEYITSCONRAD at Hey Hey It's Conrad. Of course, you can check us out on MLWRadio.com every Friday at noon Eastern for Something to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard. And What Happened When Monday with Tony Schiavone is Mondays at 6 a.m. Both of those are Eastern time. One is all WWF. The other is all Jim Crockett, NWA, and WCW. So you get a little bit of North versus South going to bookend your weekend. You can catch both of those podcasts, Something to Wrestle and What Happened When, on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, anywhere you enjoy podcasts. But, of course, MLWRadio.com is our home. And we'd love to see you in a T-shirt as well. We both have Pro Wrestling Tees store set up. You can check out BrucePritchard.com to support Bruce's show. Or if you maybe like your wrestling a little more country fried, you can check out ProWrestlingTees.com/WHW. And Bruce and I are actually doing a little bit of a world tour. We're going to be in Baltimore before Extreme Rules. We're going to be in St. Louis before Money in the Bank. And then Tony and I are going to be in Dallas before Great Balls of Fire. And then towards the end of the month in Battleground in July, Bruce and I will be in Philadelphia. So if you'd like to come see us, we would love to see you. You can get ticket information and all of that jazz from our Twitter accounts, at Hey Hey It's Conrad and at Bruce Pritchard. Or, of course, Tony Schiavone is at Tony Schiavone 24.
Well, again, I want to thank you for coming on, and it's, you know, been an absolute pleasure. We've kind of hooked up. I've messaged you a couple times, but I just wanted to have you on, kind of just give a chat about wrestling, because there's nothing like chatting some wrestling. As we joke, if you've not heard our other show, it's just two fat guys talking about wrestling. And so when I heard you say the same, I was like, well, it sounds very similar to us. But man, it's been a pleasure having you on.
Man, awesome to be here. I'm so privileged to be here. I can't believe anybody wants to talk to me. I'm just a wrestling fan like you, and we all have this great hobby together. So let's keep it going, and I'll see you at the matches.
All right. Take care, buddy.
Thanks, man.
Once again, I would personally like to thank Conrad Thompson for joining us today here on the Tapped Out Wrestling Podcast Network. It was an absolute pleasure to have him on. Before you ditch out, though, I do want to let you know that I've tacked on to the end of this interview episode the Glenn Goza It's Wrestling song that Conrad kind of mentioned there in the interview. It was a jewel. It was an absolute pure piece of gold back from that 80s time period. So definitely hang on and listen to that, because you will laugh hysterically. Glenn Goza It's Wrestling, back from World Class Championship Wrestling. But before we get out of here, we just kind of want to do the house cleaning piece here, where we let you know, hey, you can find, you know, if you have any questions, comments, tappedoutwrestlingpodcast@gmail.com, shoot it over to @tappedoutpod. That is @tappedoutpod on Twitter. Facebook is Tapped Out Wrestling Podcast Network. The website is tappedoutwrestlingpodcast.com. That is tappedoutwrestlingpodcast.com. You can find all the links to iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher. There's a media player right in the middle where you can even listen to the episodes from your computer if you want, just right down the middle. Pretty easy and pretty simple to use. Of course, we've also got our links to our little affiliates that we work with, Amazon. You know, what we ask you is, hey, if you enjoy this kind of stuff, we're bringing on people like Conrad Thompson and, you know, Matthew Yaden out of Rocky Mountain Pro, Curtis Cole, you know, some of the wrestlers we've had on, obviously. Then help, you know, just kind of helps, you know, support the show. We just, you know, we're not asking you to even to spend anything extra with Amazon. Replace your Amazon.com bookmark with the link that we have. It's just, all they're going to do is, when you're making your regular purchases, they'll give us a referral fee, a commission fee, call it what you will. But not going to cost you an extra dime. No, there's no extra fees. You're not have to buy anything. There's nothing. It's just a, you know, a cool little way to support the show and help us out. And then, of course, there's the Fight app as well. It's a free app, guys. Just kind of so you know, everybody always asks, oh, you wanted me to buy the app? No, it's a, the Fight app is free. And you're going to get a bunch of cool wrestling. You got Rocky Mountain Pro, Rockstar Pro. You can find Ring of Honor on there. You can find Impact Wrestling pay-per-views on there. So it's got some really cool product. Now, obviously, the pay-per-views you have to pay for, but the all there's lots of free content on there. I mean, you will be surprised. So use the link that we supplied on the website, or it's in our Facebook, you know, feed. It's in our Twitter feed all the time, so it's not really going to be hard to find. And download the Fight app using our link, because in that way we get credit, you know, just for, hey, saying we are sending people their way. That's kind of what they're wanting. So definitely use our link to help support the show. And then, you know, that's pretty much all we can ask you, man, is just help support the show any way you can to help, you know, try to bring you more interviews like this one with Conrad Thompson. So with that being said, man, hey, we're going to get out of here. And when we get out of here, man, it's time to tap out.
But right now, let's turn our attention to another outstanding talent, Glenn Goza, as he sings Wrestling.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, the boss called me up and said, come in to work. I just hung up on that slave-driving jerk. I'm going to wrestling. Going to wrestling. You think I'd rather be sweating on the dock or watching somebody use a hammer lock? I'm going to wrestling. Going to wrestling. R-A-S-S-L-I-N, that's wrestling. R-A-S-S-L-I-N, that's wrestling. I love to watch the missing link bang his head on a corner post. And the romper bumper butt-butt delivered by the eyes. The Freebirds, Roberts, Hayes, and Gordy, but what I like the most is Kerry delivering the iron call as only the Funerics can. Boss called again, said it's time and a half. You'll come in tonight, and I just had to laugh. I'm going to wrestling. Going to wrestling. R-A-S-S-L-I-N, that's wrestling. R-A-S-S-L-I-N, that's wrestling. Well, my girlfriend called. Friend, she could be a model for Fredericks of Hollywood, but she was hassling. Really hassling. Said I could come over early and stay real late, but I told her, honey, if we have a date, we're going to wrestling. Going to wrestling. R-A-S-S-L-I-N, that's wrestling. R-A-S-S-L-I-N, that's wrestling. There's Kevin Von Erich when he's really high and fly. Silver-haired Ric Flair when he's out there strutting. Andre the Giant must be 7'9". I wouldn't miss this for a dozen girls. I wouldn't miss this for nothing. I said, honey, I hope you ain't hurt. She said, I'm putting on my wrestling shirt. I'm going to wrestle. Going to wrestle. R-A-S-S-L-I-N, that's wrestling. R-A-S-S-L-I-N, that's wrestling. Well, last night I dreamed my life was over. There were golden streets and fields of clover, and the lights, they were dazzling. I looked for old St. Peter at the pearly gates. I found a note that said, I won't be too late. I'm going to rest. Going to rest. R-A-S-S-L-I-N, that's wrestling. R-A-S-S-L-I-N, that's wrestling. There's gentleman Chris Adams with his super kick in place. There's young Mike Von Erich with his own iron club. And I'll never forget the classic battles of the 70s and 80s. Two champions, Harley Race and David Von Erich. St. Peter told me as he let me in, from now on every Monday and Friday, Glenn, we're going to rest. Going to rest. Spelled it R-A-S-S-L-I-N, that's wrestling. R-A-S-S-L-I-N, that's wrestling. Boy, if I'd known this was going to happen, I wouldn't have bought these advanced tickets. Hey, St. Peter, are you sure these wings will fit in a ringside seat? R-A-S-S-L-I-N. So Fritz coming up here anytime soon. R-A-S-S-L-I-N, that's wrestling. in the Cotton Bowl in Dallas, Texas. Thank you very much.